everyone. Welcome to Get Psyched, a podcast about fascinating psychology topics and mental wellness. We're your hosts, Stella
and Eva.
Welcome back to part two of our conversation with Dr. Josh Davis about productivity and time management. Make sure to check out part one if you haven't already.
A quote I once heard was that the trick to juggling tasks is like determining which balls are made of glass and which ones are made of rubber. And I feel like I always use that to set my priorities like for the week. But at the same time, I used to not account for things that could come up randomly. And I would get so annoyed when like it would just go off task. But you mentioned how having that like small time to just get out of autopilot is really helpful. And I definitely agree. Like in school, we're going through class all the time, especially on Zoom. It's really monotonous sometimes. And like, you really just get stuck in this cycle. And like, in between classes, I think it's really helpful to have that moment to like, just regroup and just think about what I need to get done and like, not be on autopilot anymore.
Mm-hmm. What a lovely metaphor too. Thanks for that.
Yeah, and kind of on the subject of distractions, so one of your main points in your book was to stop fighting distractions. And when I first saw that, I thought, what? That is so counterintuitive.
That's when you knew this guy does not know what he's talking about.
No, not at all. But I was just really confused at that idea because we antagonize distractions in a way a lot, I think, especially as students. And as you said before, whenever I'm focusing on something that needs to get done and I get distracted, so someone walks in the door or I get a notification, sometimes I end up spending a lot more time on it than I wanted to. So I know you went into the benefits of taking the time off throughout the day and reprioritizing, but are there any other benefits to distractions, or could you just go into that a little bit more?
Yeah. So I think there's two kinds of distractions to think about. Also, there's those coming from the outside, a person walking in, a notification, a phone call, etc. And then there's distractions from the inside where you're trying to focus and you're just like, I can't seem to do this. It's not that I want to check Facebook right now or TikTok. It's just that like, I just don't want to keep focusing. And so I keep thinking about it. Right. And eventually you're like, fine, I'll just take a break and I'll do that. Right. So I think the first kind of distraction where somebody else comes in or a notification pops up, that one I think is addressed better by this idea of recognizing that you may have just been offered a decision point. You've been snapped out of your autopilot, right? One thing that helps for that with if it's a notification is to remember that, you know, you're not in the best mode to be thoughtful about how much time to take on for this notification if you just click on it, right? that you know, you can get into a discipline of seeing what it is so long as you promise yourself you're not going to respond right away, right? But but I think it's sort of like what can really help though is if the notification has popped up, instead of checking it, saying, oh, wait a second, all right, I've just been distracted, let me make this a decision point. You might decide, you know what, this is a good time for me to spend 10 minutes looking at and responding to whatever this notification is, or just having some fun. Great, do it, right? But you also might decide it's not the time for that. And then you're in a much better position regardless, either way. Then there's the internal distractions. And these are the ones where I think there's a different kind of fighting it that goes on, right? So for the external ones, it's like, oh, I'm so annoyed and now I feel unproductive and I want to get back to something, right? You're beating yourself up. That's a certain kind of fighting. But then there's the internal distractions where I can't seem to focus. My mind just keeps drifting. This is not interesting to me right now, you know, whatever it is. And for those, there's a real tendency to just try to like, I've got to fight through. I need to, you know, I'm going to force myself to sit here. Almost sometimes I almost feel like I've tried to punish myself to sit still, you know, like, no, you're going to do it. You know, like you need to get this done. Right. And I don't want this dragging on and you're going to sit here and do it. Right. It's sort of this internal monologue, which is not anything you would ever say to another person. Right. I mean, just like, of course, another person would be upset. Well, guess what? You make yourself upset when you say it to yourself. It's the same thing. Right. So So one thing is we can try to treat ourselves more like we would another person. So there's this tendency to fight it, to try to just stay focused. But the thing is, when your mind is trying to wander like that, that is an indicator that you are not in a position to be doing your best work right now. That this work is probably going to take a lot longer doing it this way than if you were in a different state. Right? That there's some processing that needs to happen. There's either some recuperation that needs to happen in the, you know, your focused attention systems, or that there's some unconscious connections that are just kind of stirring around in there that really, you know, there's a lot of new information you've taken in and your brain is trying to put the pieces together and could really value you turning off the information faucet so that you could just kind of work with what's already in there. So these unconscious processes are trying to happen all the time, but if we just keep the information coming, which happens if you try to stay focused, or which happens if you do something that we commonly try to do as a way to relax, to, you know, go on to any kind of social media, right?
Yeah.
It can be fun. Mm-hmm. We think like this is different, but guess what? You're still taking in information. You're still focused on something. You've got that information faucet turned on. So your unconscious mind is not going to have the chance to put these connections together. You've got to turn that off to create that opportunity. So when your mind is trying to drift, right? When you can't focus, actually, counterintuitively, the thing to do is to honor that. Is to respect that, have compassion for it, and be like, okay, you know what? My brain's trying to tell me there's some things that needs to do. And research actually shows if you're trying to do some work, some creative problem solving, people who let their minds wander for a few minutes and then come back to it actually come up with more solutions that are rated as more creative than people who just try to like plow through and just keep working on it. So you actually perform better if you've taken that break and just let your mind wander. If you take a break and you know, go to YouTube, you don't perform better. If you take a break and let your mind wander, so that means you're not looking at the phone, you're not looking at the computer, you're not reading the paper, you're not, you know, you are actually just like, you're not dealing with somebody else's problem, you know. If you're having a conversation, it's just a lighthearted, fun one. You might just be staring out the window. Actually, one of the best ways to mind wander or daydream, which is exactly what your mind is calling for in that moment. It could just be a few minutes. And then it gets boring, and then you come back and you're ready to sit down and work. But at that point, your ability to focus, your ability to make new creative connections on whatever you were working on, your ability to kind of like connect whatever you're doing to the big picture, to like your bit larger goals in life, it's all happening so much more easily, so much more automatically now because of the things that have happened in those few minutes of downtime. So you're going to come back to work more effective, more able to sit down and do the work, more able to get it done quickly and better if you just allow yourself to go with that distraction. I do need to clarify, though. I know I've said it a couple times, but I think I need to like hammer it home. Going with that distraction, the way I'm talking about, means having some downtime, having some time where the information faucet is turned off. It does not mean going and watching TV or anything that can be done on a screen, right? Because then there's still new stuff that you're processing and you're not allowing for that unconscious processing that has to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense for a lot of us. And I think part of us does know the importance of taking breaks, but
only part.
Yeah.
Part of you knows it, mm-hmm. right? And part of you is like, well, does it really matter? What I'm telling you is, it really does make a huge difference. Like if you like try it out for a while, just do an experiment. If you're not ready to embrace it, do an experiment for 1 week or even right. 1 day.
Well, right. And it totally makes sense because even machines, they can't just go on running for days and months at a time. Eventually their batteries need to be recharged, which is kind of like us taking breaks. And so intuitively, the whole idea of taking breaks makes sense, but oftentimes it's easier said than done.
Yeah. In the moment when it's happening, it's so natural to just say, well, there's only so much time. I want to get this done. I can sit here. I'm feeling okay. I still have some energy, right? These are all these things. I've done it to myself. I still do, but much less than I used to. And let me just ask you this. Have you had times where you've been sitting at the computer trying to stick with it, and then eventually you do stand up and you like walk away to, I don't know, get some coffee or something, and you're just like, oh my God, wow, I didn't realize how like spacey I am or how tired I am or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We actually don't really have great insight all the time into that when we're in that moment and when we're on autopilot. So, you know, stepping away can really make a big difference. So if you kind of plan ahead for it and say, like, if I find myself in this situation, then I'm going to do X, then I'm going to stand up and take five deep breaths at the window, you know, until I can think clearly. You know, if you come up with like a real concrete plan, you're then you are much more likely to do it.
Yeah, I think that like sort of also relates to this idea of like a mind-body connection and like moving and eating so that we're prepared for the day or like are able to take breaks. And I know one of my teachers recently has been incorporating like 5 minutes of stretching and yoga at the beginnings of our class, which is really, really incredible. But just because like even during my breaks, I know this is terrible, but like I go on my social media and like I'm just like, as you said before, just like more information is coming at me. And I think just like not having to think about anything and like looking away from the screen and stretching is really helpful for me, and like is really helpful for high schoolers who like might struggle with this balance between like getting their work done and like taking a break.
Mm-hmm. And so in that particular class, so are you aware of specific differences? I mean, you're saying you recognize that it's valuable. You can see how it's keeping you off of social media for those few minutes. Are you aware of any other impact that it is having? It's fine if you're not yet, but I'm curious.
I think like definitely for that class, I feel more engaged, especially because my first period is AP biology and like it's mainly just taking notes like nonstop. And I feel like my class that does that is English, and I feel like it's a lot more interactive, and like I just feel a lot more engaged when we do that. And I feel like even if we did that before AP bio, I might feel a little more engaged, especially because it is a class where we're just like on autopilot the entire time, basically.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. That's great. So you have some experience right there. In theory, I know I could say, well, you could do it yourself before AP bio, but I know that in practice, it really makes a difference when it's just part of the structure, you know, and there's a space for it and everyone's doing it together. So on that topic of the mind-body connection, I think I know where you were headed with that. We've been talking a lot about the brain or the mind and using those words, but it's not a computer. The way I like to say it is that the brain is not a computer on life support. It really operates very differently from a computer in many ways. You know, we use these computer metaphors because computers are, you know, amazing things that can do so much. And, you know, but historically, whatever the hottest, latest technology is the metaphor that we use for the brain. Computers, they're going to be very similar no matter when you're using a computer. You're not going to get these huge swings in productivity for the same kind of task for a computer, but you will for a human. You're also not going to get these flashes of insight for a computer, but you will for a human. So there are a number of ways, you know, at some point AI will be able to have flashes of insight, I'm sure, right? But the ways that computers currently work, recognizing then what does enable a brain to be at its best. Yeah, our brains evolved, presumably, to move our bodies through the world, to help us survive, right? Not just to think. And so there's so many intimate connections, regardless of why things may have evolved. There's so many intimate connections between the brain and the body. And, you know, one thing, for example, changing your breathing rate is going to change how you feel emotionally. You know, this is pretty well understood. You know, there's a lot of people who know this and teach this in all kinds of different fields. It works, right? So we also know that your blood sugar levels have quite a bit of an effect on your ability to concentrate and how irritable you may be and various other self-regulation factors. well, your blood sugar levels are affected by how much exercise you've had that day and what food you've been eating, right? And whether you're dehydrated has an effect on, so it's like, I mean, these are, if you think about the brain as, you know, it's a group of cells, then of course they should be affected by what you're eating and what you're drinking and your exercise and like the hormones that are moving through the body. I mean, some of these chemicals that the brain uses to communicate from one neuron to another, I mean, these are things that a lot of them are derived from things that we eat or things that we produce in our bodies when we do things like sleep and exercise. So it's not just this kind of, oh, I should do this, I'll be healthier, I'll look better kind of thing. There's actually this very direct, what's called the acute effects of exercise. So there's the long-term effects that we hear about, you know, you'll live longer and heart health and things like that. It's true, but it's kind of, you don't feel it right away. You know, it's not quite as motivating. It's sort of like, that'll get you to exercise really hard, you know, at 10 p.m. twice a week. And, you know, and then if you don't do it some days, you're like, ah, does it really matter? But if you're exercising strategically for the acute effects, if you do some kind of moderate exercise in a day, 20 minute jog or something like that, work up a little bit of a sweat, then it is almost a guarantee that you're going to be less anxious. You're going to have an easier time focusing. You're going to just be in a more positive mood, which helps for working with other people. You're going to be able to let things go that don't matter. It's just going to be easier for you to do all those things. And it's almost guaranteed. I mean, it's so common that this happens. You exercise like a moderate amount, not overdoing it actually, for the best effects, you do it moderately for these kind of cognitive and emotional effects. And for the rest of the day, you're in a different space where you're more likely to be in one of those modes where you're just, you know, able to do that great work, right? So this is like, for me, moderate exercise is like flipping a switch where you can just turn on at will these two awesome hours. Now, food and water, those are certainly having the effects. You know, these are ones where to my knowledge, it's not like as extreme of a shift. It can be depending on the person or depending on what they're coming from prior to the shift. But the exercise is really like flipping a switch. However, if you haven't had any water in the last 2 hours, you're probably a little dehydrated. Yeah. And research shows that in general, people without being aware of it are more irritable when they're dehydrated, less patient, right? I mean, okay, that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. So like these kind of things to be aware of and, you know, and then knowing which things do actually affect your blood sugar, you know, having a certain balance of protein and carbs and fat seems to be good for that. Not overeating. So if you need to stay focused, everybody knows this. If you've eaten too much and then you can't pay attention. But what if you were thinking about, this is a big day for me, so I'm going to really think about what I'm going to eat, or I have a big presentation this afternoon, I'm going to have a small lunch a little bit before it, and I'm going to make sure I get some exercise in the morning. It's probably actually going to make a big difference. That should be part of your prep for performing well at your presentation. Like, who thinks of that as their prep? Mm-hmm. I do. I certainly do. I started doing it when I was doing the research for this book. Now, and I teach all the time. Now it's, you know, this routine. Like, if I have something important to do, absolutely. It's part of my prep. It's part of my work. It's not like a would be nice kind of thing. I'm going to do better work and faster if I do it.
Yeah, and I was actually recently reading about the growing field of psychobiotics of which studies how healthy gut bacteria actually correlates with a healthier brain and more productivity. So it is really fascinating how what you put in your body and what you do with your body, with your exercise and just moving around, really does affect your mood and how efficient you are.
Mm-hmm. I read a wonderful piece in the New York Times a couple of years ago on psychobiotics, where it was talking about how the reason, at least according to this article, the reason for eating leafy greens was not so much to feed yourself, but was to feed the bacteria in your gut that they eat it. And in order to produce sufficient like the lining of your gut so that you're absorbing the right nutrients and this and that. So not only would your gut be feeling better, but you're going to get all the nutrients you need to be performing at your best, only if there's the right balance of the in the gut biome, which comes from feeding them good leafy greens. So it's a really, for me, really compelling argument for why I always want to have them.
Yeah, so for our final question, this isn't really related to advice on time management per se, but I thought it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on it and kind of get your input, your insight. So we've been talking a lot about computers and AI and social media. And so how has modern technology in recent years changed productivity, in your opinion?
Wow. I mean, so I know that many people have answered this question. So what I'll try to do is kind of think, do I have something that I think is a unique perspective on it? I think that there's some interesting things that are happening now with technology. I think we've kind of just made a shift this year during the pandemic where there's a lot more live human to human interaction that technology is enabling that it didn't before. Even on social media, it was asynchronous often, so you're not really interacting, or it was all text-based. This had elements of it. It wasn't all text-based, but it wasn't quite the same. And so I wonder if we're going to come to see these as distinct, that when it's live human-to-human interaction, like on a Zoom call or, you know, GChat or what Google call there is? Google Meet, right? Yeah, but you know, whatever those various things are, whichever ones are going to emerge as the winners, right? That when it's actual live interaction, we may find that the social dynamics of being in person start to take over again, and that we're actually getting some of these benefits of social support, and we're feeling some social pressure not to be consuming information and being actually present with another person. So that could be really different. But in terms of other forms, like, always having these distractions, these information sources, these social comparisons. I mean, there's been research showing that when people are on Facebook, on average, that they tend to be more depressed and anxious, just spending time on Facebook, right? And so that wasn't necessarily the case, but, it can make you wonder, well, what is happening there? I certainly know that I engage in a lot of social comparison when I'm on Facebook, and whether it's upward or downward, I feel worse in the end, right? Even if I'm like, oh good, I feel better than someone else. It's a fragile kind of situation where now suddenly if I don't, you know, if I'm starting to evaluate my life in terms of better and worse, I so easily feel bad again. So, you know, I know that's been documented too. So for me, I do think that, when we're dealing with the social media as it's been up until now, not the face-to-face live experience, as we're dealing with technology in that sense, I think what it's created is a world in which many people don't yet have the skills to make choices about how to use it and are being very reactive. So what's happening is like email, anyone can put things on your to-do list uninvited, right? And they can even claim that it's urgent. And it may be urgent for them, but that doesn't mean it is for you. And you can't read their emotions, so it's even harder to really suss it out. So it takes time and effort for you to do that. So I think there's two problems then. So I realize I've spoken for a long time. That's because I hadn't really reflected on it prior to this. Then again, you're getting a raw answer. maybe that'll be interesting. So we've got the information faucet, right? That absolutely has made life harder for people. I think that, we have to learn how to take responsibility in this world. Clearly we all use it, so there's value. I'm not gonna throw my phone away, right? We use it. I'm not saying it's all bad, but we have to, if we want to use it, we need to learn to take responsibility for the fact that we now have this constantly on information faucet, and learn how to turn it off ourselves and turn it on when we want it and turn it back off, right? So this is a skill that we have to build then we have to learn to recognize it for what it is so that we can. Then I think there's the ways in which we are engaged in a lot of guesswork, which is mentally taxing about what other people think mm-hmm. and feel. And that is quite draining. It takes a lot of work. And often it's an emotional thing for people. Mm-hmm. So either we need to free ourselves of that by spending less time doing it, or we just need to move beyond it and have more direct conversation more often, right? So mm-hmm. if you find yourself getting lost, spending more time than you want to, more than a couple of minutes on a text message or an email, maybe step back and think about, should I just talk to this person? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, and if you find yourself engaging in social comparison on some kind of social media, step back and ask yourself, how do I want to evaluate my life? What am I really looking to get out of this? These are new skills we're going to have to build. So I think there's, in these ways, there's a number of factors from technology that have caused us to be on autopilot more than ever before, and have created new drains on our mental energy than ever before.
Yeah.
And so we have to create skills to work with that, because I don't know very many people who are ready to just not have technology. Because it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. So, like,
yeah, it definitely
is. I love so many things about it. I'm not going to get rid of it. But I do need to make it my responsibility now to learn how to work with it.
Yeah. I think you made a lot of interesting points. And I definitely do see like what you're saying, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, when we were just learning how to adapt to Zoom. And it'll be interesting to like see what life will be like in a few years. And yeah. That's pretty much all for today. It was really, really great to have you on the podcast, and I definitely learned a lot, and I hope our listeners did too.
Well, it was great to be here. Thank you both. I loved the way that you ran it, and the questions really set me up for success, and steered me towards, you know, putting the pieces together in a nice way. So I'm sure this is going to be an excellent podcast as well. So I'm really glad I got to be here. I think to be the first one, am I right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And we hope you all enjoyed our episode with our guest speaker, Dr. Josh Davis. Stay tuned for our next Club Chat episode about our very own study strategies.